There could be several different topics or titles for what I want to bring to you this morning, but I think I'll stay with mountaintop to mountaintop. That will become a little bit clearer as we go. First of all, who are you? Are you a castanada, a wall, a barks, a pigot, Salmons, Markeson, Gibson, a wheeler? Who are you? I'm a Hoyt. Most of you know that I'm at least a 12th generation. My family came over within two or three years of the Mayflower. But that's neither here nor there. But do you like everything that your relatives do or have done? I don't think so, probably. We are all Americans here. Do we like what our government does? Our secret CIA prisons? I don't think so. We are a Christian. Do we like everything that's done in the name of Christianity throughout the world? The politics of the hierarchy and the sexual molestation and things like that. But you are an individual who is a Christian. And there's an admonishment that Paul writes to the Philippian church in Philippians 2, 11 and 12. And that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Yes, we are an individual. And the individual that I would like to speak about this morning, we're all familiar with. In fact, I probably have mentioned this person in lessons before. His name is Elijah. The story I'd like to relate has some common names that we all are familiar with. Ahab, Jezebel, and Elijah. This account, as we find in 1 Kings chapter 17, 18, and 19, is about 850 years before Christ. Ahab is king of the northern kingdom. So this is after the division of the northern and southern kingdoms, just to bring you up a little bit. 10 tribes went north, 2 tribes stayed down south. So we're talking about the northern kingdom, or the 10 tribes of Israel. The 2 tribes of Judah are the ones in Jerusalem. So this is taking place about that time, the divided kingdom. And Ahab, it mentions in 1 Kings there, he is evil, he did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him. He's not a very good character. Ahab was one of the most corrupt, most bad king of the northern kingdom. And on top of that, one of the things that he did, he married Jezebel. We won't go into all the effects that your wife has on your decisions. But in this particular case, Jezebel was known to be a worshiper of the god Baal. Very common practice at that time. In other words, Ahab wasn't too critical in his choice of wives. Ahab led him into Baal worship. And that sets the stage for what happens on the first mountaintop, Mount Carmel. And probably everybody in here is familiar with that. But just to bring us up to date, let's turn to 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 17 through 34, or 17 through 24. 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 17 to 24. We're going to see here Joshua as a strong individual. And it came to pass, when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said unto him, "Art thou he that troubleth Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, and that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam. Now therefore, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves of 400, which eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel, and gathered the prophets unto Mount Carmel. And Elijah came up unto the people and said, "How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." And the people answered him not a word. Then said Elijah unto the people, "I, even I only, remain a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450. Let them therefore give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it into pieces, lay it on the wood, put it on the altar, and I will dress the other, and lay it on the wood, and put it with no fire, and call on the name of your gods, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the God that answereth by fire, let him be God." And all the people said, "Yeah, this is well spoken." Israel had gone down to the pits of worshiping Baal. And Elijah, as it mentioned here, the only person, one individual in a group, we don't know how many people we're talking about, but in an area, could have been five, six, seven, who knows how. One person, and he's taking a stand. He's challenging the king, and he says, "Hey, you bring all your prophets to Mount Carmel, and bring all the children, and we'll just see what happens." Now, what I'm going to be doing this morning also is bouncing between 800 B.C., in 2014. Think of a time when you were brave and did what was right. For the youth, it may be that first time when someone offered you a drink or a cigarette and you refused. Or as an adult, you were the only person in your shop, the only person where you work, that did the right thing. Okay, now let's go back to Elijah. In verse 37, we know what happens, how the Baal prophets took their bull, put it on the altar, sacrificed it, danced around, jumped around, cut themselves all day long, and nothing happened. Now, there's a couple verses here, or verse 27 is very critical because it happens to us sometimes more frequently, because I know it's happened to me. While this was going on, the Baal prophets were cutting themselves and yelling at their God. And in verse 27, it says, "And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he's talking or he's pursuing her or he's in a journey. Peradventure he's sleeping. You ought to wake him up." Be careful when we mock somebody, because we'll see what happens to Elijah here. But in verse, and we know what happened, nothing happened, and then in the evening, Elijah puts the altar together, puts the sacrifice on the altar, dumps water on it three times, so much water that has filled the trench around the altar. And in verse 37, "Hear ye, O Lord, hear that this people may know that thou art the Lord, and that thou hast turned their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust, licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." Elijah is on the mountaintop. He has won the challenge. God has come down, consumed everything, the water, the stones, the wood, the sacrifice. And here everything was just the same over at Baal. How could anybody be higher, believing in God, strengthened to the max because of what happens here? What were the consequences of that first that decision that we were talking about that you made? If you were a youth, did that cut you off from all your friends so that they didn't speak to you again? Or as an adult, did that deny you a promotion, or did that deny you a raise that you might have had just because you did the right thing? If we continue on with this story that happened to Elijah, we find that he's not always on the mountaintop. In continuing on into verse 42 and 43, remember now, I didn't mention this, but it hasn't rained for 3 years. There's no water anywhere. They were actually out searching for grass to feed the mules to keep them so they didn't have to kill them. But there's no water. So in verse 42, verse 41, Elijah said unto him, "Get thee up, eat and drink, for there's a sound of abundance of rain." So Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he cast himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, "Go up now and look towards the sea." And he went up and looked, and he said, "There is nothing." And he said, "Go again," 7 times. And it came to pass at the 7th time that he said, "Behold, there ariseth a little cloud on the sea, like a man's hand." Elijah had just won, but then he goes up, puts his head between his knees because there's no rain. Sends his servant to go look. "You see a cloud anywhere?" Nope, no cloud. Elijah is beginning to lose a little strength. 7 times, and then finally he says, "Yeah, there is a little cloud about the size of a man's hand." And then we know what happens. It rains. When you made that decision, did you fear the uncertainty for what you had done? If you were a youth, "Well, what I did prevent me from being in the good, in the know with my friends, in the group, and advance me. Will I get the chance to go here or chance to go there because I made this decision and stood upright?" Or if you were an adult, the result of that decision, did that cause you to lose a promotion and it was not good for your family or the funding? Consequences of the decision. So you had a little fear, a little bit of doubt, just like Elijah doubted. There was no rain. God said He was going to send rain, but there wasn't any rain. So he felt down. And then, lo and behold, as we continue on into chapter 19, Elijah continues down his slope. Chapter 19. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and with how he had slain all the prophets with a sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, "So let the gods do so to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as one of them by tomorrow at this time. I'm going to kill you." The Lord had protected him, put him on a mountaintop. He wins the battle with Baal. The rain is coming. And now Jezebel says he's going to kill him. So Elijah sets tail and runs. And we find that in verse 3, and when he saw that he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servant there, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die, and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And as he lay there and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, "Arise and eat." We'll stop there just a second. Elijah has given up. After he had just won the battle, the rain had come. Now he says, "Take my life. I'm of no use. I'm no good. I'm not good for anything. Just go ahead and take me like you did everybody else." Verse 5. And as he lay and slept under the juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baked on coals and a cruse of water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid them down again. And the angel of the Lord came unto him the second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee." And he arose and did eat and drink, and went in the strength of that meal 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the Mount of God, which is Mount Sinai. We're talking a distance from Mount Carmel to Mount Sinai of 300 or 400 miles. And he'd stopped and he'd ran for Jerusalem to get out of Jezebel's jurisdiction. And he's going to walk now 40 days and 40 nights on one little cake and one little jug of water. Remember, he's already down. He's wanted to give up. He's had the fear. He's had the fear of his life. And now he's going to give up. But God reassures him. Today, 21 centuries later, well, probably 22, 23 centuries later, God does the same for us today. How does he reassure us? We have passages in his word. Philippians 4:13, "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." 1 Corinthians 10:13, "There's nothing that's going to happen to me that you're not going to show me a way out of." Nothing. Romans 8:28, "All things work together for them that love the Lord and who are called." Back then, he gave Elijah the reassurance with that little cake of food and a cruse of water to go 40 days. Now, if I were to go on a 40-day journey, the cake that would have to be baked wouldn't fit in this room, and the water wouldn't fit in a 20-gallon can. But he did it on a small cruse of water, as it mentioned, which is just a small pitcher of water and a small cake. God reassured Elijah that he could do it. And today, through his word, also through fellowship with others, it is hard to do things alone. That's why we meet here occasionally during the week. I shouldn't say occasionally. It's regularly. But we meet here for the fellowship one with another. The old adage that we do at campfires, you take a bunch of twigs, you pull one twig out, it'll break very easily. You get a whole bunch of twigs and try to break them, it doesn't break very easily. So it's through his word, through fellowship, through prayer. James 5:16, we have that great assurance that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Most of you know my situation in the past 4 or 5 years. Been in the church all my life. Prayer. It was something you did at the dinner table and maybe before you went to bed. But in the last few years, prayer means something when I go to bed at night. I don't mention or don't think of anything bad that happened. Now you may think, well, how can you get through a day when not too much is going good? Bill and I were up here Friday. First of all, we couldn't get the scaffolding right. The space was too wide for the scaffolding. We get the scaffolding together, and then we pulled this pipe up, and we get it all up, and we find that there's a hole in the bottom. That was our whole problem to begin with. How a hole gets in the bottom of the pipe, we don't know. So what are we going to do? Got a 20-foot piece section of pipe, and we got a hole in the bottom. Oh, we'll just cut it off. We cut it off all right. We couldn't find anybody that had a threader without going clear into Benton Harbor that you could rent, a threader for a 1-inch pipe. So Bill comes up with the idea, why don't we just scrap the idea? Let's see if we can get this pipe that's 35 feet sticking up in the air, see if we can get it out of the well pit, take one of the couplings off. So we did that. Then we could get 2 10-feet. Anyway, the whole thing came together. What good could have come out of that when you go to bed at night? We had all these problems. Well, that, not only that, when before he gets home, he has to stop and reband down his trailer with all the equipment on it. The good thing was, it's done and it's worked. So when you go to bed at night, regardless of what has happened today that was bad, the reassurance is there's always something good. Fellowship, prayer, and other people as examples. We all have our people that we look up to and say, well, if he can do it, I can do it. So we have that assurance also. So he went from the mountaintop at Mount Carmel, way down into the valley where he feared for his life, back up now on Mount Sinai. If we continue on with that story, we know that God talks to him. He doesn't talk to him in the thunder. He doesn't talk to him in the fire. He talks to him in a small, still voice. When all confusion is going on around you, sometimes we just need to stop and listen to that small voice. But yet God was not done. He was on the mountaintop in Mount Sinai now, but there was still one thing left that this story goes, and it would not be complete without this. If we read in 1 Kings chapter 19, continuing on with the account, in verse 14, and he said, I have been very jealous of the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said unto him, go, return on your way in the wilderness of Damascus, when thou comest unto Hazael, and anoint him king, and Jehu the son of shall be anointed king over of Israel. And Elisha, the son, will be the prophet to take up your stead. And it shall come to pass that him that escapeth the sword shall Jehu slay. And yet I, in verse 18 is the part, yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which had not kissed him. Elijah wasn't alone. God says, you get up from Mount Sinai. You go back to those people. You're not the only one. There's 7,000 people there that still worship me. 21st century. Yes, we have a mission also. It may not be to go and talk to these 7,000 people who won't listen. But just in our small group here, what is your mission? Is it to be there when your daughter makes a three-point shot and there's eye contact between the mother and the daughter? It might be when the judge says, you're responsible now for these children. Take care of them. It may be when you open your home to a child who is coming back who needs help. It may be that you help a struggling person or a struggling family to provide them with an opportunity to do meaningful work to help someone else. It may be you fill in the blank. But every one of us has a mission, just as Elijah did here. And God said, go and do it. So this morning, the first step of that mission is to accept Christ. It means nothing if we're floundering and we have no goal, nothing to pin to. You can't make a basket if there's no basket to make a goal in. You have to have a goal. And Christ will provide that. So the first step is to accept Christ as the Savior, not Baal. Elijah fought that battle. Elijah won, or God won that battle. God will win when He's on your side. We know it's not easy in our day and time to follow what the Lord says. I don't think there's anybody in this room that will admit that it's easy. Everyone in this room has had bumps. Everyone in this room has had trials. But we have the assurance, just as God gave Elijah, that we can do it. This morning, that first step is available. The first step is available any day. But today is the first day of the rest of your life. There's a fountain free. And that fountain is for you and me. As the song suggests, will you come? For the fountain is free, will you come? 'Tis for you and me. Thirsty soul, and how well we found out what Elijah did with one small pitcher of water, was able to go 40 days. Thirsty soul, will you come to the source? And that source is Jesus. So this morning, if you're in need of on a first-time basis or just to reassure ourselves one to another, that's why we're here. The bundle of sticks so that Baal, Satan, whatever you want to call him today, can't break us. So shall we stand and sing, there is a fountain free, and it is for you and me.